Volunteer produce newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Josh Salem. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Isabel Charlet, Farah Siddiqui, Mel Gertov, Jeremiah Hayden, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis, that's me. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Hannah Francis.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our summer fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO at 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth with Street Roots.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Many commentators have criticized the Trump administration for what they say is continuing assault on scientific expertise. They point to tax cuts, ending regulatory oversight of corporations, and plans to privatize government services. In addition, some say that the undermining and destruction of public health expertise is part of President Trump's larger culture war. KPFA weekend news anchor and KBOO contributor David Rosenberg spoke with Joseph Feinglass, a research professor of medicine in the Division of General Internal Medicine and Geriatrics at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine, about the administration's attack on science and what that has to do with the cultural war.
You believe that the Trump administration is anti-science in a way, that they're waging some kind of cultural war against science? What would science have to do with their cultural war?
So this is a great question, and I'm guessing a lot of KPFA readers know the facts about the cuts that have been occurring to public health, to the CDC, to the FDA, to all of the regulatory agencies, all the environmental science, occupational health and safety, everything from gun violence prevention to mental health and substance use cuts and infectious disease cuts. This is unprecedented. It's dramatic attack on universities and on the scientific and technical infrastructure in the United States. So when you get to the question of what is, you know, I think what you're asking me is, why is this happening? And it's, you know, somewhat of a complicated story, but I think, you know, one thing that it's not about is it's not about just cutting government spending in order to afford tax cuts for billionaires, which is what, you know, was in the new budget bill regarding extension of the Trump tax cuts. That's, you know, a minor part of this. Most of the cuts that are occurring will actually hurt the U.S. economy, will cost money for the government. But I think the attack on science, as many of your listeners probably already know, I'm reminded of Al Franken's famous quote, facts have a liberal bias. They don't like the whole idea of scientific and technical elites having prestige and forming a civil society barrier to authoritarian rule and the imposition of a particular ideological viewpoint by the president and his billionaire cabinet and oligarchic supporters. So this is basically an idea of getting rid of a major opponent that they see to their kind of agenda for taking over American society. Universities are seen as an enemy. The Project 2025 called for, they're seen as breeding cultural Marxism and, in, you know, indoctrinating people into a woke point of view, meaning that they tend to support things like healthcare for the poor and for equality, income and racial and ethnic equality in the United States. So they see this as a major obstacle to their ideology. And in the Project 2025, they wanted to strike what they called existential terror into the universities. And this is what they have been going about. I'm at Northwestern, which has had its federal funding frozen over supposedly being a hotbed of anti-Semitism, which is laughable. The pretext is actually fomenting anti-Semitism rather than attempting to do anything about it. They, you know, are basically not even negotiating. They're not even saying, well, here's what we want you to do. They tried that with Harvard, and Harvard, you know, get rid of your Middle Eastern Studies department, do this, do that. Harvard finally said, no, we're going to sue. With Northwestern, they're just refreezing the funds, and they're not really offering any type of negotiation or solution to this that would unfreeze the funds at this point. Beyond that, I think the whole cuts in the NIH that have been occurring are directly a way of getting at the universities, which is, of course, where especially the large national universities that are either federally funded or large state universities get a lot of their funding from the National Institute of Health. The humanities don't make money for universities. They don't get federal funding, yeah, although they've cut off what little bit there was. But the NIH is a big funder of universities, and that's why the NIH budget's being cut 40% in the new budget, and they've laid off 20,000 people from the Department of Health and Human Services. Well, 10,000 people were fired and 10,000 people left early at the Department of Health and Human Services. So this is the kind of thing where we can talk more about it, but there's a number of different interrelated ideological currents in the Trump administration that are creating this war on universities and on the scientific and technical elites who potentially could be influential opponents of their rule.
And yet, you know, there are conservative people in the scientific field. You'd think that they would be concerned as well. You know, I'm thinking of someone, if you go back to the Reagan administration, what was his name? Everett Koop was the Surgeon General.
Yes. Well, there's always a history of Republicans supporting NIH, supporting scientific research. And in fact, I think when you look at American capitalism in the 21st century, one of the things that you realize is that the entire growth of economic development in the United States is based on university-funded research through the federal government. And so what you can see is that corporations have generally leased out the R&D to the federal government. This is true of the pharmaceutical industry, the defense industries. All of these corporate structures are based on federally funded research and development funding.
Well, we could see that with the computer industry and the Defense Department,
which is the origin of all of the research innovations. I mean, look at the pharmaceutical industry, all the drugs that have been created, you know, the starting with lipid-lowering drugs and things like GLP-1 weight loss drugs. All of that is based on federal scientists working in not-for-profit universities and then making those advances available to corporate drug company research. So it's the kind of thing where, in a way, what you're doing here is you're dealing a serious blow to economic development by cutting. NIH, by the way, was not increasing its funding that much since the early 2000s. The actual level of funding, inflation adjusted, has been about the same. So it was a very competitive, NIH was a very competitive world before Trump. So now you have a situation where, you know, they're basically knocking out a whole new generation of scientists. One of their biggest targets for cancellation of grants and so forth was training programs. Anything that was going to create the new generation of scientists, particularly a new generation of diverse scientists, was cut and was terminated. We've seen that at Northwestern with, you know, grant terminations of every kind of infectious disease research, everything about vaccines, everything about the prevention of HIV. HIV could have been eradicated in the next 10 or 15 years. And they've set that back a generation now by just cutting millions and billions of dollars in infectious disease funding.
Again, you know, you have someone in the administration like Elon Musk, you know, he's got Tesla, he's got SpaceX, you know, this takes a certain amount of scientific and technical expertise to set those companies up and to make them successful.
Yes, a very good point. However, here's the interesting thing, and I think this is another strain of the ideology. These guys believe in AI as the future, that AI will actually replace bench science, and that you will have an increasing reliance on AI. What's really interesting is a certain focus by these tech billionaires like Musk on AI, quantum computing, space exploration, and nuclear power. They will fund those things, but they have no interest in actual historic scientific research. So there is an interesting thing, too, by the way, and this is, again, a little bit of a tangent on the conversation, but a lot of these venture capitalists and the private equity guys and financiers, and particularly the tech people who are heavily into AI, are now also on all these university boards, and they're big donors to universities. They themselves are part of the backlash against universities now, with donors, you know, withdrawing their funds, and, you know, because the universities are too woke. And to some extent, it's a reaction to their own workforces in Silicon Valley, who tend to be very woke. The scientific and technical workforce of Silicon Valley is very liberal, but these billionaire owners, not so much. And yes, there is a history of bipartisan support for science in America that Trump is just absolutely trashing. And it's a very interesting question why Republicans have not stood up. And many of the red state institutions have been hit. University of Alabama at Birmingham, places like that have also been hit badly by these cuts and terminations. And just the general attack on universities by going after their endowments, through taxing their endowments, and going after the whole idea of indirect cost reimbursement for NIH grants, which is what universities use to fund the research laboratories. So this is, you know, a complicated thing. And I think tech billionaires are part of the Trump coalition that is interested in also bringing universities to their knees and getting them to bend the knees, so to speak. And I think the other big piece of it is the COVID backlash. You know, the huge population of people that believes that the real problem with COVID was the vaccinations. That was what caused all the problem. You know, the people who wear the T-shirts that say, "I survived Fauci," when in fact, COVID vaccines saved millions of lives here in the United States and around the world. There is this major libertarian new age kind of backlash that we see with Kennedy and others that sees vaccination as the evil. And it's
weird. Most a lot of new age people are kind of left of center, but there's this group that's kind of right wing.
Yes. There's an overlap between crazy right wing and crazy left wing. And it's part of this long history, as what Hofstadter called the paranoid imagination in American politics, of just sort of this conspiracy thing of people who do their own research on the internet and therefore know better than the scientists, and that scientists are an elite that should be brought down. And this is something that, again, it's very much part of a larger attack on education and on public education in particular. We see this in terms of the cuts to the elimination of the Department of Education and its support for public schools, the idea of vouchers replacing public schools so that people can go to private schools where there's ideological uniformity. And you have this ability now to go after, you know, these education department cuts are very, very important in terms of both attacks on universities and even on things like community colleges. So you have a situation now where public education is seen as socialism by people on the right. And maybe they're right. Maybe public education is socialism in the sense of everyone being treated the same and creating a community across different tribal groups in the United States. But the reality
is just the vision of the founders, right? To have democratic education, that kind of thing.
Yes. And that it was a tremendous strength of American democracy that you could have people all from different communities getting a common education that allows them to communicate across community boundaries is one of the fundamental reasons for public schools, instead of being just indoctrinated in a particular sector faith in your education. And this is what's under attack right now. A lot of this is also anti-regulatory. Another big part of the Trump administration reasons for being anti-science is to free American corporate interests. Many of these billionaire guys that are, you know, the oil company executives that are running the EPA, or the people that want to gut the National Institute of Occupational Health and Safety was eliminated. People who are doing climate change research all got cut. So you have all the people fired at NOAA. National Atmospheric Ocean Atmospheric Administration, people in the FDA, people doing tobacco control, which isn't even funded by taxpayer dollars. It's funded by tobacco industry. The Office of Tobacco Control was eliminated. You know, so the kids that are, you know, this is the group that gives money to states and cities to prevent kids from smoking under age 18 smoking. That office was eliminated, which has zero cost to the taxpayers in the first place. You have no longer having inspections for salmonella on chicken farms, and the milk inspectors all got fired. You know, you have, you know, this across the board anti-regulatory, anti-environmental science agenda.
Do you see this kind of thing happening in other so-called authoritarian states that Trump is said to be modeling?
Of course. Hungary is the great example where they went after the universities and took over their boards and so forth. Yes, this is happening in any authoritarian regime. The key is to get rid of the media, independent media, and the independent academic world, and put it under government control and ideological control of the leaders. This is a worldwide phenomenon. And again, the cost to America is going to be gigantic.
Because it'll be very hard to catch up.
And you're destroying a whole new generation of people that wanted to become scientists. And by the way, the people that they fired, a lot of these were the data scientists and the people that were bringing in new techniques and new ways of doing things for the federal government. And these are the people that were the first to go. The people that were going to create more efficiency and government efficiency are the ones that were cut first.
So they might go to other countries.
And, there's a lot of people going to be out there looking for jobs.
Cable News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. Today, we take a deep dive into Street Roots' cover story, Shut It Down. Immigrant rights advocates from across the Northwest rally for those held in an immigration detention center in Tacoma, calling for the release of Jorge Luis Reynaldo and others. I am joined with Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden about his article. Welcome, Jeremiah.
Hi, Hannah. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So tell me about the day that you were there, May 31st. What was it like?
This last Saturday, I met first with people at the VOES Workers' Rights Education Project at their headquarters here in Portland. They had put together a caravan to go up to join some other organizations from around the Northwest in Tacoma, just outside of the detention center up there, where one of their workers, who we reported in our newspaper last week, one of their day laborers who found work through them is being held and has been held since February 20th. So they were kind of focusing on that, trying to bring him some hope, to him and others inside, sort of a community building event, calling for their release. That day, there's people kind of going in and out of there pretty regularly. There are a lot of deportation flights. That Northwest ICE Processing Center in Tacoma is a hub, so they're holding people from not just here in the Northwest, not just in Washington, but from states, all around the country, before they send people out. So there's a pretty broad coalition of organizations that were there to call for them to basically free everyone. One of the great successes came just a couple days, a day or two after Street Roots published a story last week. Advocates have been calling for a long time, for a few months, for the release of a person, that this Filipino immigrant who lives in the Northwest, named Auntie Lynn. And she was actually released finally, just essentially, I guess it was the day after Streets reported. It had nothing to do with our story, obviously, but from that detention center. And so there was a little bit of an exciting kind of mood there, understanding that people can get stuck there, but people can also get out of there. While we were there, a bus pulled up with a new detainee. And one of the things Auntie Lynn had said when she was released is, there's always, let 8 people out of there and maybe deport them, or maybe they've found, asylum here in the U.S. and been granted asylum, but that every time they let 8 people out, there's another 7 that come back in. So you really do see this kind of revolving door right there firsthand as the buses come through.
Hmm. Were you able to communicate with the people inside? Like during the event, sorry.
Yeah, organizers had set up, they have tablets where people can kind of call in and out. They share these tablets inside the detention center with 10 other people. I think there's 8 tablets per 80 people in that per area. And so, yes, they tried to call. One of the things that happens fairly often and happened this last Saturday was that as soon as they get through and start you know, Rufino Reyes from La Resistencia in Seattle had like called on a computer and she was holding up the computer and Jorge Luis was right there on screen and she's showing it to the crowd and then it just cuts off instantly and then they call back and Jorge Luis is like, you know, he really wants to be so inclusive of the other people around him. And it was like very sweet because, you know, just this kind of first moment that he could see the audience through his camera being there held inside the detention center. He like turned around to say to all of his, you know, people inside, like, hey, come see this. There's people outside. And before he could even turn around, they cut it off again, you know, and they did that about five times. So nobody really, you know, they're holding microphones up trying to get him to be able to say, you know, what the support meant to him, what they wanted to, you know, see if anybody wanted to share with the crowd outside, what their experiences are. And they're really only able to get through when, Annika, Maxfield, who works with Voz here in Portland, called on a cell phone. And then she was basically able to relay some information about what, you know, the people, the detainees inside were wanting people to know.
Mm. Yeah, what organizations were present there?
There were a handful of organizations and individuals who had heard about this gathering. This is something that does happen with some regularity, some bigger, some smaller. People are constantly communicating with people inside. But yeah, it was the Voz Workers Rights Education Project from here in Portland that had a bus that took a bunch of people up and a whole caravan or a bunch of cars following. And let's see, International Migrants Alliance, Migrante Portland, La Resistencia in Seattle does a lot of great work. You know, both supporting people right there, but also they're tracking deportation flights at SeaTac Airport to kind of see how frequently flights are going in and out. Rufina Reyes from La Resistencia said that those have gone from, you know, sort of anecdotally, but their tracking has basically gone from seeing about one a week, you know, in the past since 2018 to having multiple deportation flights leaving from SeaTac every day.
Wow. You also mentioned that the CEO for the for-profit business that runs the Northwest ICE Processing Center on behalf of ICE, which is called Geo Ground Inc., had released a statement on May 7th, which was kind of interesting. What were some of the things that he said?
Yeah, it's a really important point. I mean, this is a publicly traded company on the New York Stock Exchange. Like, this is like human trafficking stuff, you know, for all the concerns about human trafficking in various areas of, you know, that you hear about from law enforcement officials and stuff. Like, one here is, it, you know, this is for profit, moving human beings around the world for profit. And they don't, it's not a small profit. You know, this guy, his name is George Zoli. He's like the executive chairman of the GEO group, said, we believe we have an unprecedented opportunity to assist the federal government in meeting its expanded immigration enforcement priorities. So they're like investing a whole bunch of money, just even this last year, like $70 million, saying they want to strengthen their capabilities to deliver expanded detention capacity, secure transportation, and electronic monitoring services to ICE and the federal government. They reported $2.42 billion in annual revenues last year, with their adjusted earnings, you know, like kind of minus interest, taxes, deductions, all of that stuff, or including, you know, all of the interest and stuff is over $435 million last year. This year, they're already in that first quarter with that adjusted income is nearly $100 million. So it's, you know, that they just released their quarterly financial reports. They're very excited about that to show that stuff to investors about how much money they're making off of shipping people around the world who are seeking asylum in the United States. And, you know, that seems a very central piece of this that we don't necessarily always talk about. There are a lot of disgusting things happening around immigration, but there are people who are literally just looking at graphs, you know, to see if their profits went up or down.
Are there more opportunities to get involved with these organizations who are meeting up, the immigrant rights advocates coming up?
Yeah, these things do happen pretty regularly. I think, you know, if listeners want to, you know, look, read the article, buy a copy from a vendor, is always a fantastic way to get street roots. These organizations, in particular, that are listed in this article are doing a lot of work all the time and can always use more support. I know Voz here in Portland is a very, very small team and with limited capacity, as are, you know, most people trying to do good in the world right now are at a pretty limited capacity. But there are a lot of different roles that people can play in this, and it seems to be a really central piece of the, you know, sort of this fascist version of our government that we have right now is to instill fear in these communities of people who are just looking for a better way of life.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything else you wanted to say about the article today?
Yeah, one of the things that you know, when they were able to get a hold of a few of the people, the detainees inside, alongside Jorge Luis, they wanted to pass along a few things to the crowd that had gathered there. And they really were kind of ready to be able to have their voices heard by people and about some of the issues that they are experiencing inside. They say that food doesn't really show up until 10, 11 p.m., sometimes midnight, before they're even fed dinner. They're supposed to be generally let outside. I did email with a GEO group spokesperson, Christopher Ferriera, who, you know, gave me all kinds of lines about how they have around-the-clock access to medical care, in-person, legal family visitation, library access, religious diets, things like that. But as far as the people inside are saying about the conditions there, you know, it's really quite the opposite. They also raise the points that it's really hard to get medical care. And even when they can, you know, there aren't enough doctors. And so there are really long lines, and they are often left to wake up as early as like 5 a.m. to go down to the infirmary to try to get care. So, you know, if you think about the prison system, anywhere in the United States, it's generally like that. These are people who are thrown into areas where the public really doesn't see people anymore, and they're not particularly transparent either, especially when they're publicly New York Stock Exchange traded companies. It's really hard to get a hold of records and do the kinds of, you know, investigations that really elucidate the conditions there. So I do want to just kind of pass along somewhat indirectly from the detainees held there that these conditions are not fantastic by any means.
Thanks. And one more time, where can people find this article?
The best way to get street roots is to buy a copy from a vendor. They are out in your neighborhood. They can always use your support. You can also find us at streetroots.org.
Thanks so much for joining me, Jeremiah.
Thank you, Hannah.
That was Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden talking about his most recent article, Shut It Down, Immigrant Rights Advocates from Across the Northwest Rally for Those Held in an Immigrant Detention Center in Tacoma, calling for the release of Jorge Luis Reynaldo and others. You've been listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis. Safe.
to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kbu.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of